Do you recognize this? I asked the surveyor, pointing to a kind of interlocking lattice work that at first I hadn't even realized was a pattern, but that covered the wall from just below the phantom script to just above them, the main strand roughly in the middle. It vaguely resembled scorpions strung end to end, arising, only to be subsumed again. I didn't even know if I was looking at a language per se. It could have been a decorative pattern, for all I knew. Much to my relief, she could see it.
No, I don't recognize it, she said. But I'm not an expert.
I felt a surge of irritation, but it wasn't directed at her. I had the wrong brain for this task, and so did she. We needed a linguist. We could look at that lattice work script for ages, and the most original thought I would have is that it resembled the sharp branching of hard coral. To the surveyor, it might resemble the rough tributaries of a vast river. Eventually, though, I was able to reconstruct fragments of a handful of some of the variants. Why should I rest when wickedness exists in the world? God's love shines on anyone who understands the limits of endurance and allows forgiveness, chosen for the service of a higher power. If the main thread formed a kind of dark, incomprehensible sermon, then the fragments shared an affinity with that purpose without the heightened syntax. Did they come from longer accounts of some sort, possibly from members of prior expeditions? If so, for what purpose? And over how many years? But all such questions would be for later, in the light of the surface. Mechanically, like a golem, I just took photographs of key phrases. Even as the surveyor thought I was clicking pictures of blank wall or off-center shots of the main fungal words, to put some distance between myself and whatever I might think about these variants, while the main scrawl continued and continued to unnerve. In the black water with the sun shining at midnight, those fruit shall come ripe, and in the darkness of that which is golden shall split open to reveal the revelation of the fatal softness in the earth. Those words defeated me somehow. I took samples as we went, but half-heartedly. All of these tiny remnants I was stuffing into glass tubes with tweezers, what would they tell me? Not much, I felt. Sometimes you get a sense of when the truth of things will not be revealed by microscopes. Soon, too, the sound of the heartbeat through the walls became so loud to me I stopped to put in earplugs to muffle its beat, choosing a moment while the surveyor's attention lay elsewhere. Bemasked, half-deaf, for different reasons, we continued our descent. It should have been me who noticed the change, not her, but after an hour of downward progress, the surveyor stopped on the steps below me.
"Do you think the words on the wall are becoming fresher?"
"Fresher?
More recent?"
I just stared at her for a moment. I had become acclimated to the situation, had done my best to pretend to be the kind of impartial observer who simply catalogues details. But I felt all of that hard-won distance slipping away.
"Turn off your light," I suggested, as I did the same.
The surveyor hesitated. After my show of impulsiveness earlier, it would be some time before she trusted me again. Not the kind of trust that responded unthinkingly to a request to plunge us into darkness. But she did it. The truth was, I had purposefully left my gun in its belt holster, and she could have extinguished me in a moment with her assault rifle, with one fluid motion pulling on the strap and freeing it from her shoulder. This premonition of violence made little rational sense, and yet it came to me too easily, almost as if placed in my mind by outside forces. In the dark, as the tower's heartbeat still throbbed against my eardrums, the letters, the words, swayed as the walls trembled with their breathing, and I saw that indeed the words seemed more active, the colors brighter, the strobing more intense than I remembered it from levels above. It was an even more noticeable effect than if the words had been written in ink with a fountain pen. The bright, wet slickness of the new. Standing there in that impossible place, I said it before the surveyor could, to own it. Something below us is writing this script. Something below us may still be in the process of writing this script. We were exploring an organism that might contain a mysterious second organism, which was itself using yet other organisms to write words on the wall. It made the overgrown pool of my youth seem simplistic, one-dimensional. We turned our lights back on. I saw fear in the surveyor's eyes, but also a strange determination. I have no idea what she saw in me.
"Why did you say something?" she asked.
I didn't understand.
"Why did you say something rather than someone? Why can't it be someone?"
I just shrugged.
"Get out your gun,"
the surveyor said, a hint of disgust in her voice masking some deeper emotion. I did as I was told because it didn't really matter to me. But holding the gun made me feel clumsy and odd, as if it were the wrong reaction to what might confront us. Whereas I had taken the lead to this point, now it seemed as if we had switched roles, and the nature of our exploration changed as a result. Apparently, we had just established a new protocol. We stopped documenting the words and organisms on the wall. We walked much more swiftly, our attention focused on interpreting the darkness in front of us. We spoke in whispers, as if we might be overheard. I went first, with the surveyor covering me from behind, until the curves, where she went first and I followed. At no point did we speak of turning back. The psychologist watching over us might as well have been thousands of miles away. We were charged with the nervous energy of knowing there might be some answer below us, a living, breathing answer. At least the surveyor may have thought of it in those terms. She couldn't feel or hear the beating of the walls, but as we progressed, even I could not see the writer of those words in my mind. All I could see was what I had seen when I had stared back at the border on our way to base camp, a fuzzy white blankness. Yet still, I knew it could not be human.
Why?
For a very good reason, one the surveyor finally noticed another 20 minutes into our descent.
"There's something on the floor," she said.
Yes, there was something on the floor. For a long time now, the steps had been covered in a kind of residue. I hadn't stopped to examine it because I hadn't wanted to unnerve the surveyor, uncertain if she would ever come to see it. The residue covered a distance from the edge of the left wall to about 2 feet from the right wall. This meant it filled a space on the steps about 8 or 9 feet wide.
"Let me take a look,"
I said, ignoring her quivering finger. I knelt, turning to train my helmet light on the upper steps behind me. The surveyor walked up to stare over my shoulder. The residue sparkled with a kind of subdued golden shimmer, shot through with flakes, red, like dried blood. It seemed partially reflective. I probed it with a pen. "It's slightly viscous, like slime," I said, "and about half an inch deep over the steps." The overall impression was of something sliding down the stairs.
"What about those marks?"
the surveyor asked, leaning forward to point again. She was whispering, which seemed useless to me, and her voice had a catch in it. But every time I noticed her becoming more panicky, I found it made me calmer. I studied the marks for a moment, sliding, perhaps, or dragged, but slowly enough to reveal much more in the residue left behind. The marks she had pointed to were oval and about 1 foot long by 1/2 foot wide. 6 of them were splayed over the steps in 2 rows. A flurry of indentations inside these shapes resembled the marks left by cilia. About 10 inches outside of these tracks, encircling them, were two lines. This irregular double circle undulated out and then in again, almost like the hem of a skirt. Beyond this hem were faint indicators of further waves, as of some force emanating from a central body that had left a mark. It resembled most closely the lines left in sand as the surf recedes during low tide, except that something had blurred the lines and made them fuzzy, like charcoal drawings. This discovery fascinated me. I could not stop staring at the trail, the cilia marks. I imagined such a creature might correct for the slant of the stairs, much like a geostabilizing camera would correct for bumps in a track.
"Have you ever seen anything like that?" the surveyor asked.
"No," I replied. With an effort, I bit back a more caustic response. "No, I never have." Certain trilobites, snails, and worms left trails, simple by comparison, but vaguely similar. I was confident no one back in the world had ever seen a trail this complex or this large.
"What about that?"
The surveyor indicated a step a little farther up. I trained a light on it and saw a suggestion of a boot print in the residue.
"Just one of our own boots."
So mundane in comparison. So boring. The light on her helmet shuddered from side to side as she shook her head.
"No. See?"
She pointed out my boot prints and hers. This imprint was from a third set, and headed back up the steps.
"You're right," I said.
"That's another person, down here not long ago." The surveyor started cursing. At the time, we didn't think to look for more sets of boot prints. According to the records we had been shown, the first expedition reported nothing unusual in Area X, just pristine, empty wilderness. After the second and third expeditions did not return and their fate became known, the expeditions were shut down for a time. When they began again, it was using carefully chosen volunteers who might at least know a measure of the full risk. Since then, some expeditions had been more successful than others. The 11th expedition in particular had been difficult. And personally difficult for me, with regard to a fact about which I have not been entirely honest thus far. My husband was on the 11th expedition as a medic. He had never wanted to be a doctor, had always wanted to be in first response or working in trauma. A triage nurse in the field, as he put it. He had been recruited for Area X by a friend who remembered him from when they had both worked for the Navy before he switched over to ambulance service. At first he hadn't said yes, had been unsure, but over time they convinced him. It caused a lot of strife between us, although we already had many difficulties. I know this information might not be hard for anyone to find out, but I have hoped that in reading this account you might find me a credible, objective witness, not someone who volunteered for Area X because of some other event unconnected to the purpose of the expeditions. And, in a sense, this is still true, and my husband's status as a member of an expedition is in many ways irrelevant to why I signed up. But how could I not be affected by Area X, if only through him? One night, about a year after he had headed for the border, as I lay alone in bed, I heard someone in the kitchen, armed with a baseball bat. I left the bedroom and turned on all the lights in the house. I found my husband next to the refrigerator, still dressed in his expedition clothes, drinking milk until it flowed down his chin and neck, eating leftovers furiously. I was speechless.